So look, if you want to grow your wealth, your income, and increase the amount of time off, then these are the shortcuts that can help. Welcome to the Wealth Creation Podcast.
Welcome, hope you're well. So my name's Dan Latta, we're live in the Mastermind Group, and we are thankfully back into the glorious sunshine. You can see the pool behind me, you can see blue sky behind me. Thank goodness for that. Hopefully we're kind of turned the corner now from all this rain that we've had for the last, since we've been in lockdown, basically. But in this session, I wanted to talk to you about how to grow, or how I grew my multi-million pound property portfolio back in the UK. I'm pointing over there. I don't know if that's where the UK is. I think it's over there, but who knows. So a couple of things I want to talk about in this session. If you've got any questions, by the way, stick them in the box down below. Happy to pretty much answer whatever you've got, frankly, as long as it's not derogatory in any way. I'm fairly an open book. So if you've got any questions, let me know. We'll go for about 20 minutes, because otherwise I get sunburned on my head. it's just nice to be able to do this outside again after all the rain that we've had. Anyway, so when we first started off 20 years ago now, everybody told me getting into property was the wrong thing to do. Everybody told me, from my parents, from people I worked with, my friends, oh, you don't want to do that. Oof, oh, my mate did that. Oh, no, you don't want to do that. It won't end well. And here we are in the glorious sunshine in the villa. Finally on lockdown, but then so is 95% of the planet. And here we are. Rent's still coming in. We're just having our best month ever. We've actually paid not just this month's mortgages and service charges and maintenance. We've also got enough to cover next month and some of the following month as well. So we've done that because we've systemized the portfolio to work. Even though I live in the Mediterranean, it still works even though I'm not in the UK. And it actually works better because I'm not in the UK, because I'm a bottleneck. As anybody will tell you, you sign up for our digital marketing services, I'm definitely a bottleneck. That's why I don't do the work. We pass it on to the team that does do the work. So what we had to do was systemize the process of buying, refurbing, tenanting, and actually going back quite some time ago now, we ended up with a lettings agency as well, which enabled us to manage. Didn't cost me any money. In fact, the letting agency was a profitable venture for us. But when we first started out 20 years ago, there were no training courses, there were no books, there was no podcasting. Facebook didn't exist. YouTube was only just coming around 20 years ago. I don't even think that existed. But certainly access to content didn't exist. So we just had to make it up as we went along. And we went along making a lot of trial and error. And that's how a lot of people used to do it, I guess, back in the old days when we walked to school and we all lived in black and white in those days, of course. So how did we first get started? So that very first property of mine, I bought for £42,500. At the time, we did a gifted deposit. I didn't understand what it was at the time, but the person we were buying it from, we actually bought at 40. They gave us £2,500 extra, which we paid back on completion. So we paid 42 and a half. We paid a 5% deposit. We got straight into that deal. And then a couple of months of being in that, I moved my friends in, and it was loads of beer money. It was great. I didn't understand what I was doing back then. We didn't understand about money. If I'd have understood about money back then, I would have been putting all of that money into either more property or into like EFT funds or index funds or anything like that. But I didn't understand those things back in those days. You know, I read the Motley Fool book, if you remember the Motley Fool, it's still around. And Rich Dad Poor Dad, I started before that came out, but that kind of reinforced the journey that I was on, and very grateful for reading those whole selection of books. I've seen people go, oh, Rich Dad Poor Dad got it wrong. Did he now? Here I am sat in a villa in Spain. I would argue that he got that wrong. He got that very right, and me following some of the advice in that book enabled us to get to where we are right now. So we bought that first house. It was 5% deposits in those days, but it was a gifted deposit anyway, so we got in for no money down, effectively. And then we rented it out. It was a three-bed, back-to-back terraced house up in Leeds in Hyde Park. Still got that. It's now valued at £200,000. Actually, it went up to 200 grand. It's probably worth about 170 now. But we bought it for 40 grand about 20 years ago. I'm not going to go through each property because there's a lot of them, needless to say. But we had some milestones along the way. The first milestone is getting your first deal. and it's by far the hardest thing. And I see all these people talk about rent to rent and serviced accommodation and lease options and all of that kind of thing. And there's nothing wrong with, well, there's plenty wrong with doing that stuff. But it's a good stepping stone if you haven't got the initial funds to get you started. But we didn't start with that. We started using gifted deposits. We've not bought a property except one that wasn't below market value. Got a comment, by the way, put them in down below. But all pretty much all our properties were bought below market value. We did buy from estate agents, but we didn't buy in a traditional manner. We leafleted an awful lot. So like physically dropping leaflets through houses. And also when we had the lettings agency, we were dropping leaflets for our lettings agency, for our We Buy Houses for Cash company and our We Drop Leaflets company. So imagine that. We were dropping leaflets about dropping leaflets for our leaflet dropping company, which then doubled up for our lettings agency and our BMV, below market value properties. And literally, that's what we did. That's how we did it. We would also be speaking to estate agents. And if you know me for the last 20 years, you know we're not keen on estate agents. And we're not keen on letting agents because we can screw it up just as good as anybody else. Why are we paying you to screw it up when we can? We're great at screwing things up. Why are we paying you 10%? So that's why we do that. But with the estate agents, we would let them know what we were looking for, and then they'd want proof of funds, and we would have that. We'd have 100 grand sat in the bank on one day only, you know what I mean? We'd complete, and the money would come in. But we're so busy buying the next deal, it would be in the bank account for like 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. And what we'd do is we'd go print off a statement with it in, and then the money went out because we were buying the next deal. And back in those days, we never had any money. We never had cash flow. This is kind of the Achilles heel for property investors, is that we buy stuff, we might do it up and sell it, and as soon as we've made the money, we've already spent that money on to the next deal and the bigger thing and the next thing and the next thing and so on. So that's definitely something that happened for us. But when you're dealing with estate agents, you know, they get people coming in all day long, oh, I'm an investor, I'm a cash buyer, and they want proof of funds, and most people are liars, and they don't have proof of funds, or... Well, it's all my money's locked up in an account somewhere. Oh, is it now? Yeah, of course it is. I've heard it so many times for property investors. But for us, for example, we wanted to control the method that we were buying these deals. So, for example, we got an invitation from an estate agent to go and look at a property. And we went in there, and this was my fault because I didn't check. It was a waste of time. But I went in there, and we liked it. We were interested in putting an offer in. And I asked, what do we do about putting an offer in? And they said, yes, sealed bids. And I was like, sorry, what? Sealed bids? We don't do sealed bids. Like, you just wasted 20 minutes of my time. That was only 20 minutes. But like, sealed bids for us is not a way for us to buy property. We want to be in control of that buying mechanism. And that didn't allow us. And it was a waste of time because there's all these other properties that we were looking at as well. And we should have gone and looked at those. But for us, we wanted to control the way in which we buy property. And generally, if you're buying from an estate agent, you're buying retail. You can't control that buying mechanism. It is controlling you. It is in control of the selling mechanism because it's through an estate agent. And really, this is one of the reasons why we didn't use estate agents over there. Some we would, and we would build a relationship. One of them was Reed's Reins in Crossgates. Bought a couple of deals through those guys and various other estate agents in that local area, because that was our kind of our gold mine area, if you like. But we would buy a property, we would do it up, and then we would sell the property through the same estate agent. That way we're able to build a relationship over a period of time, and then they'd put us in that top drawer or the bottom drawer. You know that bottom drawer where the deals come in, they put you on the investors list. We would get onto that list through doing it in that way. We bought and sold hundreds of properties doing it this way and making money doing up and selling. And obviously back in those days when Sarah Beeny was on the telly with House Ladder, remember that? And Property Doctor, we used to watch all that. Good bit of inspiration, watching all the idiots getting it wrong. Stuff not to do. but you could buy something, you know, you could buy a house, wait till tomorrow and sell it, and you make money back in those days. They were great days. But we would also buy a place that was in a decrepit state that needed to be done up. We would do the property up. And then in addition to the fact that house prices were shooting up all the time, we would then get a good whack on top of that. And that's really how we grew the portfolio to begin with. So that was building up a lot of cash, but we would buy a place, we'd do it up and sell it, we'd take that money, we'd get the next place, we'd do that up and sell it, we'd get the money. And sometimes we'd sell and sometimes we'd hold. Like looking back from the last 20 years, maybe we shouldn't have sold some of those deals. I bet there's a big thing right now, you know, like we've got Section 24 where you now can't offset your mortgage. And actually, our loan to value used to be incredibly high. Obviously, prices have gone up since then, and our loan to value has dropped as we're continually paying down some of that cash. And actually, our goal now is to really start paying down some of that loan to value even more than we're currently doing, because we don't want to be lugging around this big sack. You imagine a big sack of debt on your back. Now, bear in mind that interest rates are 0.1%, 0.1%, I think they are right now. And so they're very, very low. But that's just where we are today in 2020, mid-April. In 5 years' time, I don't think interest rates are going to be this low. There's a whole inflation thing coming. Now is the time to, while the sun is shining, to repair the roof on your house. That's a metaphor, by the way. You need to start paying down your debt. Get rid of your credit card debt. Get rid of your car loan debt. Get rid of any debt that's not good, i.e. consumer debt, car debt, loans, credit cards, any of that kind of thing, store cards. Get rid of all that. And then once you've got rid of all that, you've got a choice to make. Do you pay down your mortgages or do you buy more stuff that's going to generate more cash flow? And whilst cash flow is king, to borrow from Mr. Cardone, paying down debt is also king, I think. You know, we had up to £80,000 of credit card debt at one point. And what, you know, when I think back to those days, the amount that we had to service on that debt every single month, it's like kryptonite around your neck, strangling your cash flow. And so I would highly recommend that you get your loan to values down to a reasonable level. Like I'm thinking 50% is a reasonable level, because you can remortgage in any climate when you've got 50% loan to value. If you're at 75% and above loan to values, you can't remortgage that stuff. Like, you can, but you're going to pay a whack for it. And if something changes in the marketplace, which it is doing because of coronavirus, like, what's going to happen there? It worries me hugely. By the way, if you've got a comment, I've got to put my nice little banner up. Let's just stick that up there. The cash flow show. Welcome. I'm just checking. It is Wednesday today. I thought it was Tuesday then for a second. I'm like, oh, I'm a day early. I don't know what day it is. We're 5 weeks in lockdown. This is literally where we've lived for the last 5 years. We've not left the front gate over there. We've not left it. If you've got any questions, just stick them in the comment box. Happy to answer any of those. So just going back to the journey then. So we bought that first one. And then pretty much what would happen is I'd buy more and more places. I bought 2-bed houses down in Hare Hills, £35,000, 37 grand at the time. Bought a couple of them. Bought some city centre stuff. And basically just went and bought all sorts of different stuff. I was buying 3-bed semis, 2-bed back-to-backs, city centre apartments, and my mindset has changed consistently over a period of time, constantly changed my mind as to what are the best type of properties. So before COVID-19, I love 3-bed semis, by the way, because you're going to get a family in there, they're going to rent, they're going to stay in for 5 years. That's pretty much what happens. We put a swing set in the backyard, you get a new family in there, and they're there for 5 to 7 years, do you know what I mean? They're great bread and butter properties. And then it used to be 2-bed back-to-back with DSS. They used to be great, and now they're a pain in the backside. The amount of DSS that don't pay. And so actually we put a stop on putting DSS in the properties because they just don't pay. And why should we have to wait 8 weeks to get universal credit from the government? But having said that, here we are with key workers, and we have a number of key workers in those lower-end properties now. They're the ones who are actually guaranteed paying their rent, because the delivery drivers for Deliveroo, or they are cleaners in hospitals or in schools. We just put a tenant in. It was £600 a month. We charged £250 for the first month rent, and then the next month we're charging £500, and we didn't take a deposit off them. So we really helped this key worker move in. She was definitely down on her luck, but we put her in. It's a great tenant right now with COVID-19, and I think we're going to have this for the next couple of years, quite honestly. This COVID-19 is not going anywhere fast. The key now is to secure your income and making sure that the type of properties that you're buying into has the probability of a possibility of securing that income. The potential to make sure you have a continuity of income right now is more important than renting to heart surgeons. Heart surgeons as well, of course, are key workers. But they tend to rent city centre apartments, or KPMG or PCW. They might rent city centre apartments. That's Price Cooper Waterhouse, PwC, Price Waterhouse Coopers even. But those kind of tenants used to be really great tenants, but now they're all furloughed. So it's like, what do you do, you know? So we were buying properties, and we were buying a good mixture of properties. And actually, this is the answer to that problem. is that you buy a good mixture of properties. You don't just buy studio apartments in the lease at the centre. You don't just buy two-bed back-to-backs on the outskirts, which are like 9 minutes on a bus, you know, literally less than a mile from the city centre. They're great properties, by the way, but it's not just them. It's not just two-bed penthouses in Leeds City Centre and Grade 2 listed buildings, although we've got them as well. It's not just four-bed detached houses or three-bed semi-detached houses, but we've got them too. For me, it's a good mixture of all sorts of different properties. And I used to think, oh, no, it's definitely two-bed back-to-backs. I should have bought more of them. And then I progressed on to, well, it should have been three-bed semis. And now I've progressed on to studio apartments or one-bed apartments for 60 grand. Or, and you can get them, by the way. That's definitely what we're looking at next. But it's a combination of all this different stuff. But more than that, the thing that runs central throughout all of it is how much debt are you carrying? Because it doesn't matter what your income is. If you've got too much debt, it's going to strangle you like kryptonite. And really, that's the key. And it depends where you are, by the way, in the cycle of your buying. Like, going back 20 years, I've got your question, by the way. I'll answer that in a second. Going back 20 years, you know, it wasn't about loan to value. We were, if I could get 120% loan to value, that would be awesome because we're into buying as many as we can. Okay. And then, of course, 2007, 2008 came, wiped out a good proportion of property investors who had too high loan to values. We were really struggling with that kind of stuff. And luckily, our loan to values weren't that high because we'd already gone through that stage. But for those people just going through that stage, they got wiped out. They had properties that couldn't rent, properties that couldn't sell. I knew a guy who had properties that he bought off plan, had to complete, didn't have the money to complete. They sued him. He's gone bankrupt. You know, this is 12 years ago, 13 years ago. But this stuff happened. And what's really funny is you see all these young property investors coming in, gung-ho, and teaching everyone how to do it. And they've been in the business like 6 months or 2 years. And they might have about three or four or 10 properties in 6 months. Dude, you've not gone through 2007, 2008. You've not gone through COVID-19. Come back to me in 3 years' time and let me know how you survived COVID-19. Because there's something about to happen with COVID-19, I reckon. And you need to be having extra incomes. Let me just answer this question. So do you expect house prices to go down over the next 6 to 24 months in the South East? So I can't talk about the South East because I don't live there. I don't invest there. And it's a unique little market. London is its own bubble, and I never understand London. For me, I've always thought London is a capital growth kind of area, but it goes like this. And if you get in here and it goes like this, well, you lose all that money. If you go in here and it goes like this and it goes up, you're up. So I don't know. I'm not a capital growth investor. I'm a cash flow investor. We live monthly. We pay rent, by the way, on our villa here. We pay monthly. I want income to come in monthly. I don't care if the price goes up of how much the villa's worth. We've just put an offer in actually on it and wait to see if that's going to be accepted or not. But we don't know if prices are going up, prices are going down. That for me is not the way that I invest. For me, I've always thought that if I can get between £5,000 and £10,000 a month coming in for the rest of my life and it goes up in line with inflation, I'll never have to work ever again. So that has always been my number one thought process. I've never bought for capital growth. The only time I have bought for capital growth, but that's because I've applied for capital growth through buying below market value, dropping leaflets, speaking to estate agents, getting in on the deals, you know, then adding value to the property and then either selling it or refinancing it, you know, keeping it and refinancing it forever, right? But I've never gone out of my way to buy capital growth properties for the sake of capital growth. That is not my investment strategy. If I had £1 million right now and I just wanted an easy life, I'd just go put £1 million into a FTSE 100, into the index fund, especially right now because it's dropped. That's going to go 2 or 3 years, that'll be higher than it was right now. If you look historically at that, that's what's happened. But 60 grand a year, 5 grand a month, you never have to worry again in your life. Easy peasy. You go traveling around Bali and the Med, you know, you can live on 5 grand a month dead easy. Like, why would you need to go up and risk, you know, what if you buy at the wrong level and it's going up and down, you buy here and then prices drop and all your money's gone. Now you've got to have a job for the next 5 to 10 years. Screw that for a game of soldiers. That's just not my investment strategy. And that's not to say that that shouldn't be your investment strategy. I just noticed, by the way, do you like my new car? There you go. That's our little Barbie truck. We were playing Barbies this morning and we were at the car wash. So it's a little water jet down there. So we're washing the car. The car got covered in Nutella, as you do. And then we cut with little sponges, and then we washed the car, me and my 5-year-old. So that's the only time I ever buy a new car, by the way, is when I'm buying it for my 5-year-old to play with. So where were we? So capital growth is not for me. I don't know what's going to happen to prices. If I was to take a guess, I can't take a guess. I have no idea. It would be like guessing what the weather's going to be 3 years from now. I just don't know. You know, I just don't know. I can take a guess. Let me take a guess, but don't hold me to it. Okay, so what's going to happen in the next 6 to 24 months in the Southeast? There's a whole number of different elements coming in, isn't there? So there's Brexit, that's coming in, what's going on there? There's also an element that the UK has gone down in price, not value, but price. The UK is on sale right now. It's on sale by about 15 to 20% because the exchange rate has exchanged currencies since Brexit, June 2016. So there's been a massive shift in the value of our property. It's still the same, but to buy it costs less money if you're coming in from overseas. So there's been a lot of buyers from the Far East. One of my clients deals almost exclusively with buyers from the Far East, and they're buying up swathes, lots of properties in Leeds, and they're buying portfolios effectively because the UK is on sale right now. So you've got this balancing act between people maybe trying to sell the stuff and a flood of properties coming onto the market. And then people from the overseas actually buying that stuff, so that pushes prices back up. But if too many people are coming onto the market, they're just going to hold on to it. And one thing we've noticed in the last 6 to 12 months is a number of people building extensions, changing, you know, putting new carpets in, new curtains, extensions, adapting the housing, new bathrooms and new kitchens. We've seen that. And in fact, because we've seen that, we're actually buying building firms in the Southeast right now. We've got one going through, hopefully, touch wood, that the thing will go through. We're supposed to complete in April. That's not happened. So hopefully we'll complete in a month or two. But that's what we're looking at, is taking on more building companies. And if you've got a building company and you think you want to sell it, then come and speak to us because we're interested. So I think what will happen is people will not put their properties on the market. If there's less properties on the market, and as long as there is money available to buy, there has to be liquidity in the market in order to buy, prices will go back up, right? Because the supply isn't there. The demand might be there, but the demand will only be there if they can get the finances in place. So, and again, this is this topsy-turvy thing. Mortgage companies have really tightened up their criteria in the last couple of weeks about what you can buy, what the loan-to-values are. And now I know that from a buy-to-let point of view. I don't know that from a residential mortgage point of view. So, like, that's why there's so many variables coming in here. But this the answer for me depends on this, and I want you to understand this really clearly, okay? If you're a capital growth investor, that question, that one right there, is worth a lot of money. I'm not a capital growth investor. I'm a cash flow investor. So if I buy today for 100 grand, studio apartment, Leeds City Centre, and that drops to 60, I don't care. So, yeah, but you've lost. I haven't lost anything. I ain't sold the thing. You only, you know, write up the loss if you sell it, or if you have to sell it, which is even worse, which is why you got to get your cash flow right. But if you don't have to sell it, you haven't lost anything, right? You only lose when you actually come to the point of selling and you're either up or you're down. So if you don't have to sell, you don't have to sell. That's why I'm a cash flow investor. And we've been hit with this in 2008, 2009. Property prices plummeted. We were in negative equity on everything. Everything. We went from being millionaires to not being millionaires through the equity that we lost. And now we're back up. It's like, well, we were even a millionaire in the first place. I don't know. It's all on paper. It doesn't make a thing. Could be worth a pound for all I care. And I just don't care. If property prices drop by 50%, awesome. We're going to use the cash flow that we've got right now. We're going to put that and start buying more. That's what we'll do. And so it depends where you are on the cycle. It's like, you know, it depends on your attitude to risk. There's so many, it's about 15 different variables that you've got to work out that suits you the best. And I can only talk about from what suited me the best and in terms of where I am and my position right now. And we've done okay, and it looks like we'll do okay, and touch wood, touch a lot of wood at the moment, because nobody knows what on earth's going on. We lost a tenant a couple of days ago. They went back to Kuwait because they've been instructed by their country to go back, so there's a grand. got another tenant in another couple of days. There's about £1,400 on that one, so there's £2,500. Now, luckily, we've got a lot of tenants and we've got a lot of cash flow coming in. And even with those, it doesn't really impact us too much. We can take much bigger hits as it happens. We can take a significant number, actually, of tenants leaving and we're still okay. But it's as a percentage of a portfolio, isn't it? It depends on your costs. It depends on your loan to values. But for me, you know, it's about protecting yourself as much as you possibly can. And if you're living, you know, we have it in basketball, which I play a lot of, you live by the jump shot, you die by the jump shot, which means that if you live by capital growth, you're going to die by capital growth. Cash flow is completely different, totally different ballgame. If my expenses are £4,000 a month and I can pull in £20,000 a month, hey, I can take a 10% loss, a 50% loss on that and get down to £10,000. It doesn't make a difference, right? But if I've got £100,000 and it's only worth 50 and I have to sell it and my mortgage is 75, I'm down £25,000. That's a problem if I have to sell it. If I don't have to sell it because I've got cash flow, it's not a problem. Hope that kind of makes sense there. So just to finish up on this then, we went far longer than expected. So in terms of buying and how we actually did it, we went in and kept buying properties. So I buy one property, I would do it up and refinance it, pull the money back out, use that to buy the next property, do it up, refinance it, pull it back out. Don't forget, we bought below market value. And in those days, we had Mortgage Express, where you could buy on the Thursday with bridging finance. And then on Friday, you'd pull down the funds. So you'd be buying a £100,000 property for £70,000. We had 85% loan to values back in those days. And we'd get an 85% loan against the £100,000, because that's its actual value. Pay off for £70,000. We'd have £15,000 in our back pocket. Bought a Porsche with that. Thanks very much. That was jolly good. Stupid, but good. Loads of fun. Don't recommend it. It depends what cycle you're in. But I'm 47 now and I'm looking at Lambos and I'm like, too old to even get in a Lambo. Bad back and all that. You know? It's this balance, isn't it? We're now looking at yachts instead, which is stupid. But, you know, back in those days, that was really easy to do. Now, you can still do that. You just can't do a same day or a next day refinance, but you can do it in 6 to 12 months. So now you should be cascading them. But you can only do this if you're generating enough cash. And you've got to be generating enough cash. You know, we've got the link for the property sourcing down below. If you can get £3,000 property sourcing deals, £2,000, £3,000, how many of them do you need for a deposit? So let's say £20,000 deposit up in Leeds. So you source 10 deals. That's you do one a month for 10 months. There's £2,000 per month. There's £20,000. There's a tax element on that, of course. But let's just forget about tax for a second. There's your £20,000. You buy your next deal. And then you can start to escalate this and speed it up and cascade these deals. That's how we did it. And we were buying 1 month. We think we bought 7 properties in 1 month, which is, don't do that, by the way. It is beyond stressful. The amount of cortisol flowing through your body at that point is just not worth it. Just slow it down, balance it out, average it, have a plan over the next 3 to 5 years to get you going, and then balance that out again, and then review what you're going to do for the next 5 to 10 years, and then review that again for the next 10 to 20 years. That's how you need to do it. I get everybody wants to buy as many as they can, but we've done that. And honestly, it is one of the most stressful things. And then something falls through, stress goes up. Another thing happens, stress goes up. Someone's lied to you about something, or you can't get in touch with the other side solicitor. Honestly, so many things. Luckily, we had experience when we bought 6 or 7, I can't remember, in that 1 month. We had a lot of years experience when we got to that stage. But even then, it was still stressful. So just buy slow and steady. Cash flow will win the game here. It'll definitely win the long-term game. We had a client that we were coaching, and they had a £300,000 property, and they were holding on to it. It was £500,000 worth now. They owed £300,000 on it. They had £200,000. And I'm like, you could invest that in 10 properties. It'll pay you £4,000 or £5,000 every month for the rest of your life. Why don't you sell up? She wanted to travel before she was too old. Didn't do it. Prices went down. There you go. You lost your opportunity. So for us, and this isn't financial advice because we can't give financial advice, but for us, it's about cash flow, generating monthly cash flow. If you're £200 a property, 20 of those properties, £4,000 a month, never have to work again. Jobs are good as far as I'm concerned. Okay, hope that's useful for you. We'll catch up with you on Friday on the Mindset and Hustle show. Hopefully we'll be outside again in the nice sun. We'll speak to you on Friday. Have yourselves a good couple of days. Take care, stay safe, and we'll speak to you soon.
Hey, it's Dan here. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate each and every one of you. Please click like or subscribe to the entire podcast.